From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of December, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of AgMarket.net, hear about renewable diesel and its future in North Dakota, in the Western Corn Belt, in fact, with Frayne Olson, agricultural economist, and how that may very well play back into the eastern part of the Corn Belt over the coming decade. And then we'll discuss what's been happening in the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt and talk about the weather forecast, too, with Don Day, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn for the day settled at 653.5. It was down a half cent. The May a half lower at 653.5 as well. And next year's December at 596, down one. January soybeans 19.25 higher at 1479.75. The March at 1484.5 up 19. And November beans up 8.75 at 1391.75. Bean meal $2.10 higher. The bean oil for the day up $1.92. Wheat futures soft red down four at 750.75. The hard red 783.75, down 0.75 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at 156.35.25. Higher feeders were up 57.5 cents on the day, and lean hogs up 87.5. Wayne Nelson now joins us from AgMarket.net to take a look at what happened at the CME Group today. Hi, Wayne. Thank you much for being with us. I appreciate that. Another unique day in Chicago. Soybeans rallied again. What happened?
Well, you know, we're looking at the weather down in South America. Argentina's turning dry again after the nice little rain it had over the weekend. And the forecast is arid for the next 10 days. That along with the idea that we had an announcement of selling some beans today to Unknown also, so that popped the beans. And, you know, early this morning we came in, everything was green across the screen. The inflation number was less than what they were looking for. It was a 0.1% rather than 0.3% as they were forecasting. So we had the stock market up, we had the dollar down, and we had the indexes, you know, just moving on forward here. So, you know, it was sort of a positive day all around.
What are your expectations for the rest of this week and the end of the calendar year?
Tomorrow is the last trading day for the December grains. We saw them that started out better, ended up a little on the poor side here tonight. So we're just a little bit suspicious that a little more selling pressure might come in the corn as we look at the possibility that, you know, not much corn being sold to China and looking along that way. So the beans continue to rally on the meal strength. We're continuing to see a little bit of enthusiasm there, but, you know, as time gets thinner between now and Christmas, we're going to see a lot of traders take off at the end of this week. So, you know, but I think it's going to look like the bulls are going to eat turkey at Christmas, and we don't know about New Year's now, though, so that doesn't look good for anything that's going on. So, but, you know, like I say, we did have a nice turnaround today, crude up $2, the metals all higher. And now we got to look and see what the Fed say. If they would do over a half a percent, I think it would be very negative. But I think we're pretty well locked into that half percent rate.
Yeah, so we'll be watching that very, very closely. When you think about the 2023 growing season and you have discussions with farmers, I know crop insurance will be part of that discussion. That decision doesn't need to be made for another 2.5 months or so, nearly 3 months. However, they can make some sales. Do you think they should?
You know, as we look at it out here, we think, you know, sales above $6, especially get a little bump on top of $6, just getting at least something done is probably a very good idea, Todd. There's a lot of things that can happen the next year. You know, we are looking at, and we have heard some thoughts that fertilizer don't need to rush and buy it. It looks like it can probably come down a little bit coming into spring now with a few of the things that are happening out there, so that could lower some of their costs. But I think that it's, as we looked at the University of Illinois numbers and looking at things, we'd sort of like to have some corn locked in above $6 on the board.
And if you're covering costs, do you want to make sales for soybeans as well? And do you use them to cover costs for corn inputs?
Well, I think so. And like I say, where we're shooting for above $6, we're shooting for above $14 on the November beans. And like I say, there again, we're not going like 50 or 60% sold, but 10 or 20%, 10 to 25% sold is not a bad place to be started in here and hope it's our poorest sale. But there's a lot of things that can happen in the new year in the financial markets and what's going on. I mean, we are just looking at some very rough times to figure out what is going to be happening in the financial world.
Hey, thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net. Let's continue now a conversation we started yesterday with NDSU, North Dakota State University Extension Agricultural Economist Frain Olson, about renewable diesel. We were talking about soybean exports at the time.
Here in Illinois, 3 of every 4 rows of soybeans are exported. That goes, of course, through New Orleans. I don't know what that number looks like. I think it's actually 70% or nearly the same in North Dakota,
yep.
Except they go by rail to the PNW. You said that China has flattened out. Will renewable diesel pick up the slack in your part of the world?
That is a hotly debated topic, yes. And we do have one plant that is currently under construction. ADM put a facility up about 100 miles west of Fargo. There's another plant that's being they're working on it right now. They're starting to put together some dirt, etc. That's in a small town about 30 miles west of Fargo. And then there was recently an announcement of a plant that was scheduled originally for the Minnesota, kind of northwest Minnesota area, but it's now been moved into Grand Forks, which is about 80 miles north of Fargo. All of these are going to be very large commercial size facilities, you know, spending between $300, $400 million to put them up. They're all going after this potential for renewable diesel fuel. There's actually 5 additional crush plants in Canada that are being built for canola, also trying to tap into the U.S. renewable diesel fuel market or renewable fuels market. So there's a lot of activity here in the northern area for both soybeans as well as corn. These plants are large enough that they are going to chew up a large portion of our existing crops. So the expectation is we'll have not only an increase in acreage base, but we're counting pretty heavily on the trend line yields to help us out as well.
Secondary question. I take it most of these plants are built to service the California market to begin with, and more likely, is there enough rail to pull all of that off?
Yes, there is. And that's one of the things. Our region up here is set up, it is better for rail. We did have some rail disruption issues back in 2013, 2014. Where to some degree there was some weather issues on the grain side, but also the grain rail space was competing with some of the oil space. So we were taking grain in the eastern portion of the state and pushing it west. We were taking crude oil from the western portion of the state and pushing it east into the refineries for the primarily the gasoline and diesel fuel market. And, you know, you think about a one-way road, you know, somebody's got to give, somebody has to push, you know, go off on a siding and be able to let the other trains pass. So we did have some congestion issues several years ago, but those have now been basically straightened out. We've got some additional pipelines that have been put in for the oil. There has been areas that have been double tracked. The railroads have also spent a lot of money putting in additional sidings to allow more trains to be able to meet part way to be able to regulate the flow. So the rail capacity is there. Obviously, we're still worried about engines and crews and making sure that the railroads in general are running as efficiently as possible. But we have the rail capacity to handle both the soybean oil and the crude oil part of it, as well as the meal. But the question is, you know, where do we ship it to? So the first plant, the ADM plant in Spiritwood, North Dakota, which is again about 100 miles west, that's actually co-owned by Marathon Oil. About 25% of that facility is going to be owned by Marathon. And there's already a contract in place where the vegetable oil from that plant will be sent out to Western North Dakota to a small refinery that's already been retrofitted to handle renewable diesel. So all the vegetable oil is going to go out to Western North Dakota, get refined, and then go from there into the California market. For the other facilities, the ones that are now being planned and kind of finalized, we don't have as clear a picture on who's going to refine the oil, because the raw vegetable oil coming out of a plant still needs to be refined to a higher level to be able to take out the impurities. And that still has to be run through a refinery to be able to convert it from a vegetable oil into renewable diesel fuel. So there's still some logistical questions on where exactly all that's going to go and who's going to be purchasing it. But my understanding is there's a demand base for it, and it is going to hit the California market. That's the primary target audience.
Do you expect the bean meal will provide a livestock boon in the area of a different sort?
There is that conversation going on as well. In fact, here at the university, we just added a brand new position within our extension section for livestock development, anticipating that there will be this opportunity, that we're going to have adequate feed supplies now, and that will hopefully open up some opportunities to expand livestock and livestock production in the region. I think there will be some of that occurs, obviously. But I think that the demand is going to grow a lot faster, the supply is going to grow a lot faster than the demand. The crush plants are going to come on a lot quicker than we're going to be able to expand our livestock sector. And so the expectation right now is a lot of that soybean meal is going to be headed towards the West Coast. I know AGP, which is one of the large crushing companies here in the U.S., also has some export facilities in the PNW. They're growing and expanding those facilities to try and handle a larger volume of soybean meal, primarily targeting the South Asia market, not necessarily China per se, but more of the South Asian countries. That there is a demand base for meal. They have an interest in that, and they don't have the domestic crush capacity to be able to handle raw soybeans. So I know there's a lot of questions about market development and where is all the meal going to go, but my opinion, my assessment is that I think there is an international demand for that, primarily in the South Asia region. We do have to worry about logistics and making sure we have the handling capacity to deal with the larger volumes. But it's, people are already working about it. They're thinking about it. They're talking about it.
And this would displace Argentina?
I don't know if it would displace. Probably it would put some more competitive pressure from soybean meal from Argentina, because that is primarily where they're sourcing it. They have been buying some U.S. meal, but our logistics system and our export system for meal isn't as well developed as it is for the raw soybeans. So, yeah, that they would be our primary competitor. I also know that the Canadians export a little bit of canola meal, not to the volumes that we have for soybean meal available, obviously. But so we do have some competing meals, especially into that South Asia market.
Now, speaking from the Eastern Corn Belt side of this debate, if you could figure out how to get the meal out of the country, that would be a good thing for us.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the one thing, it is handling meal is different than handling the grain, the raw soybeans or wheat or corn, because it is a powder. It has some different characteristics. You have to have a little bit different handling equipment. It doesn't flow quite as easily as a grain would flow, and so there has to be some adjustments made, especially from an export standpoint, to handle larger volumes and make sure that you're able to load and unload that product as easily as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So the facilities that right now handle grain do have to be modified a bit to be able to handle meal efficiently.
Frayne Olson is an agricultural economist located on the Fargo campus of North Dakota State University, Extension. You know, the 2022 Illinois CCA Conference is back, and this year it's live in person at a brand new location, the iHotel, right here in Champaign, Illinois. CCAs can earn up to 8.5 CEUs for attending the whole event, which features some great speakers on topics important to Illinois agriculture, things like controlling water hemp, carbon markets, enhanced efficiency fertilizers, climate change and agriculture, new drone uses, and conservation drainage. Non-CCAs, of course, are always welcome to attend. Registration at the door is $100, and an agenda can be found online at IllinoisCCA.org. That's IllinoisCCA.org. Let's check in now on the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services. Hi, Steve. Thanks for being with us. Let's start with the price of diesel fuel. Gasoline, of course, has been dropping back. Diesel fuel is a different subject matter and has been for a while. What's your assessment?
Well, I do think the diesel market has been affected by the buildup of inventories that we saw not only in Europe, but other places as well, given the fears of shortages and the like. And what's happened is we've seen some unwinding and pulling back in making fresh cash purchases by those users, which has did leave a void in this market. And what's happened is diesels did fall quite quickly relative to the crude market, which also weakened. But diesel broke pretty hard in terms of the margins to crude oil that we had seen. And it really did come back here the last couple days, due to, I think, the Keystone leak, which does provide a heavier oil to our Gulf Coast refiners and to Oklahoma refineries, which did, in fact, provide support to the market as supply concerns emerged.
What does the demand picture look like?
It's pretty steady. What really, I think, affected the diesel stock situation, which we've seen build here the past few weeks, was the refineries coming back on after their typical maintenance period to really run full out. We're still looking at refinery constraints, but we do have some capacity additions in Beaumont that will be taking place earlier in 23, along with some other, because of the high margins, some other refinery expansion taking place overseas. In addition, you've seen Chinese refiners, because the Chinese government did free up export or import quotas for crude, producing products, which has helped supply more products such as diesel to those users in Asia, which has helped maybe displace some of the supply that may have been going from the U.S., keeping it somewhat here. So those factors has helped moderate the margins of diesel to crude to a significant degree. It was about $20 at one point, where the margins went from $65 over crude to as little as $43. And I mean, this occurred over a month's time. And, you know, these confluence of events have been just amazing in terms of the energy complex. And that's just one.
Is there a reason for producers to lock in their needs for the spring at this point?
I think there is. Certainly this leak is of concern on the Keystone pipeline. They were using higher pressure on that pipeline, which was approved, I think, last year, to move more oil through that pipeline. You'll probably see reduced flows even when it opens. And the question is, when does the oil start to flow through that pipeline? It's typically a couple weeks, but our diesel stocks are still relatively low despite some of the increases we've seen. In addition, the overall stock situation in terms of crude oil has gotten progressively tighter as the SPR, or Strategic Petroleum Reserve sales, pretty much ended, and those supplies are not available. And when we had those supplies, we pretty much were able to hold the crude inventory levels, but have seen them drop pretty sharply here recently. Another factor associated with the leak is certainly the fact that some of that oil through that pipeline went to Cushing, and Cushing's the main delivery point. Although that oil was not deliverable, it does provide some badly needed oil to those refineries in those areas. So they have to shift to other blends.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That's Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services.
Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. Hey, Don, thanks for being with us. What do you see in the United States over the next couple of weeks?
There's going to be lots of winter weather coast to coast over the next 2 weeks as we see a strong storm coming out of the Rockies and Plains states that'll bring significant snows and stressful livestock weather conditions to North and South Dakota, Nebraska, parts of Montana, Wyoming, and Colorado, then snow will then be spreading into Minnesota, Wisconsin, parts of Iowa, northern Illinois here by the end of the week, and then very cold air going to settle in behind this storm system. Rainfall will be widespread across the Delta, across the lower Mississippi Valley, across the Ohio Valley, and the southern areas of the Corn Belt will see areas of rain and some thunderstorms, while heavier snows in those northern areas. Now, there's a lot of cold air up in Canada and parts of the northern hemisphere. In fact, temperatures in Siberia earlier this week dropped to minus 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oof.
There is a lot of cold air in the northern hemisphere that is going to be working its way into the lower 48. In fact, temperature readings here by the end of the week and the weekend and next week into Christmas week are going to be trending much colder, especially by late next week. So be ready for the second half of December to be quite a bit colder.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.